How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
If you could ask the mayor of Chicago one question, what would it be? I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Earlier today on the show, as part of our ongoing monthly series, Ask the Mayor, we welcomed Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson for a live call-in conversation. Now, during the hour, listeners from across the city and suburbs called in with questions about immigration, ICE raids, and public safety, transit, and much more. The mayor responded directly and candidly to what's on your mind. Now, we began with protests in Chicago over ICE enforcement and President Trump's policies. Mayor Johnson said yesterday that he's, quote, counting on all of Chicago to resist in this moment. On Reset, he clarified what resisting looks like to him.
Listen, peacefully resisting, you know, policies that are harmful to working people and families across this country, that is the fundamental right that we have as a democracy. And, you know, my responsibility as chief executive, mayor of this beloved city, is to ensure that the constitutional rights of all of the residents of this city are protected and that we keep people safe. And so, yes, this is an appropriate time to elevate the collective voice that we believe that the Constitution is something that allows for our city and our country to be democratically governed, and having a peaceful resistance is the there's an appetite for it, but it's also, I believe, the appropriate response, particularly at a time in which there's an effort to bring chaos and division within our country.
Yeah.
And finally, you know, peaceful resistance is what has led to civil rights for Black folks, equal rights for women. I mean, our country has evolved because of peaceful resistance.
Here's the thing. When you tell folks, you know, to go out and resist, and when they do and protest, there's going to be a police presence, right? After a protest on Tuesday where thousands were gathered, we know that 17 people got arrested. And legal observers from the National Lawyers Guild of Chicago, they said that CPD's response was, quote, especially violent and aggressive. So in these situations, what police tactics are permitted? What are you comfortable with?
Constitutional policing, and that's what we administer in our city. There was a deal of consternation leading up to the Democratic National Convention on whether or not we would be able to hold the peace and keep the peace. We were able to do that. There were a number of spontaneous protests that broke out, speaking out against the war in Gaza. We were able to manage that protest and those series of protests constitutionally. Look, you know, if people work outside of or behave outside of the constitutional provisions that are allotted and they become aggressive, that could lead to violence. Our police department is poised and responsible to ensure that those individuals are addressed. Now, look, we had thousands of people that showed up on Tuesday, as we've had before. And, you know, 17 arrests and a relatively peaceful presentation, that's something that the city of Chicago has to adhere to, because anything short of that, we don't want to provoke this, you know, federal administration, any type of provocation that would lead this president to administer harm and destruction is something that we are working hard to prevent.
Yeah. Let's go to the phone lines. John's been waiting in the Gold Coast. Hi, John. What's your question for the mayor?
Hi, thank you so much. My question for the mayor is twofold. One, if the sanctuary status policies that are in place preclude or prohibit police from cooperating with ICE, you have 150 police officers in your detail. How is it that you look police officers in the eye when they're not able to cooperate with ICE, but then on Wednesday or Tuesday of this week in the protest, protesters are clashing with police, throwing water on them, pushing them, screaming obscenities at them? How is it that you justify or juxtapose that hypocrisy of you know, using police to protect yourself while also not allowing them to conduct their jobs and cooperate with ICE, but then protesters are going out and attacking and clashing with police?
Thanks for your question, John. Go ahead, Mayor.
Thanks for the question, John. Well, first of all, you know, it's the responsibility of my office to ensure maximum safety for the people of Chicago. And I work hard at that every single day. It's my top priority. Our police department in and of itself has the responsibility to keep people safe. And that's what they're doing. So there is no contradiction there. If you're asking whether or not police officers should dub as federal agents, well, that's counterintuitive to, I believe, what you're ultimately getting at. Why are we asking our police officers to do more work than what they're already doing? And the Welcoming City Ordinance just simply says that absent a warrant, our police officers will not dub as federal agents. Because in order for police officers to be effective, there has to be trust between law enforcement and community. We have worked hard to restore the trust and build trust with our police department and everyday residents. Look, I can tell you, no one calls 911 more than people who live on the west and south sides of Chicago. And so there is a growing sentiment of greater trust and accountability within our police force. And, the Welcoming City Ordinance, as well as the Illinois Trust Act, ensures that police officers, whether they are Chicago police officers or police officers in any other jurisdiction, that in order to maintain trust within the community, we cannot have residents afraid to call the police in fear of being deported.
Yeah.
Right. And so that is the beauty, quite frankly, of this moment, is to make sure that our police officers are not being asked to do the job of the federal government.
Nicholas is on the line in Humboldt Park. Hi, Nicholas. What's your question for the mayor?
Good afternoon, Mayor Brandon Johnson. I just wanted to ask, how can we build trust among different communities? I live in Humboldt Park, where a lot of my neighbors feel folks are jumping the line when they were coming to Chicago with needs. I understand the validity of some of my neighbors stating that they've been suffering for years, they've been waiting for resources, and they feel others jump the line. My understanding is we should look out for each other. As a victim of a gunshot wound years ago, I know it's very important to have witnesses speak up, call the police without having any fear that when they call the police to report crimes, that they're not going to get their information passed along to ICE. How can we build trust among all communities during these challenging times when we need each other?
Yeah, that's a great question. Chicago, there's no secret. We've had dividing lines in our city for a very long time, and I'm working to bust through those lines. And this is why, I have a diversity of thought around me. One of the most diverse, if not the most diverse administration in the history of Chicago, black, brown, white, Asian, young, older. These are all individuals that have experiences that connect to the various communities like Humboldt Park or Austin or Gage Park or Streeterville, no matter where you are, Auburn, Gresham, southeast side of Chicago, wherever you are, our needs are the same. We want to feel safe in our communities. We have to talk about the things that draw us together, and safety is one of them. It's why I've worked hard to bring all forces together to ensure that we are building safer communities, and that's happening all over the city, right? I mean, just this month, already 28% reduction in homicides alone. And so there's more work to be done, but that is my focus, is to work through areas of consistent needs that we all have. We all want our schools to be well-resourced and funded. This last negotiation allowed for class sizes to be lower, to expand libraries and librarians, to protect the rights of immigrants and the LGBTQ plus community, while also protecting Black history, right? All of us benefit from those investments. Also, mental and behavioral health support services. We're expanding mental and behavioral health services around the city, and we're building more affordable homes. Here's what I believe draws us together. We are positioned now to be the safest, most affordable big city in America. And if we commit ourselves to education, making sure that we're building more affordable homes, providing mental health support services and good paying jobs, we'll continue to see the decline in violent crime in this city. And then leaning on one another, to your point, to make sure that every need is met. Look, people were dropped off by the governor of Texas, literally dropped them off on the floors of police districts. That's unconscionable. Quite frankly, I find it to be wicked. Our city stood up and ensured that human beings were not, you know, used as political pawns here. And even with that investment, to make sure that individuals were not sleeping on the floors of police districts, it didn't stop us from investing in our schools. It didn't stop us from investing in affordable housing. It did not stop us from investing in youth employment. All of those investments continue to take place. And we drove violence down in the city of Chicago. So we need to continue to tell that story so that it gives people more hope that when we work together and build together, it works for everyone.
Are you concerned, Mayor Johnson, that President Trump and Secretary of Defense Hegseth, that they might mobilize the National Guard and send forces here to Chicago?
Well, we are anticipating, if nothing else, six cities across America, including Chicago, where these so-called attack teams will be released.
So what will you do?
Well, first of all, let me just acknowledge the fact that, you know, this militarized approach is an escalation to what, you know, I'm saying is intentional, right? These have been peaceful, nonviolent protests, and we're going to continue to require and demand that people protest peacefully. But what we're going to do is we're going to do what we've always done as a city, is that we're going to protect people's fundamental right to be able to peacefully assemble and to raise and elevate their voices and continue to, you know, work to make sure that people are safe and that they're protesting peacefully. What we have to ensure that those who come to Chicago and Chicagoans who protest, we cannot allow Donald Trump the benefit of characterizing these protests other than what they are, which are peaceful demonstrations. And any type of escalation in protest will simply provoke the federal government to do what they have been doing, which is to create intimidation and harm and division within our country. The city of Chicago has long been known for our protests, whether it was, you know, Dr. King coming to Chicago fighting for affordable homes or public school teachers taking strikes in order to challenge administrations.
Yeah, you've been a community organizer yourself.
So exactly. I've led, you know, peaceful protests, and they have been effective. Quite frankly, I'm not mayor of Chicago if we're not effectively having peaceful protests. So it can be done. The city of Chicago has consistently shown up for working people around the globe, and that's what our expectation is still is.
Governor Pritzker testified this morning in front of the Congressional Oversight Committee about the Illinois sanctuary policies. Here's a little bit of what he said. He said, quote, "We will not participate in abuses of power. We will not violate court orders. We will not ignore the Constitution. We will not defy the Supreme Court. We will not take away people's right to peacefully protest. We also respect and expect this administration to respect the traditions and legal precedents that dictate how and when our National Guard and military are deployed." So I remember you talking yesterday in your press conference about talking with Governor Pritzker and Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle. So in this mix, how do you understand your role, Mayor Johnson, just in strengthening or maintaining democracy?
Well, first of all, you know, my top priority is to make sure that the people of the city of Chicago are safe. And that is my focus every day, all day. And in this moment, it's also important that we have a clarion call to protect the interests of our democracy, as well as to protect, you know, our humanity. So my role is twofold. One is to ensure that our First Amendment is protected. I've done it. I will continue to do that. My second role is to call us to a higher place. You know, our country, and particularly this city especially, has been built by immigrants and descendants of slaves. Right. And so what this president is doing, and I agree with the governor at this point, is that he is eroding and circumventing the Constitution. And you either support the Constitution or you do not. And clearly we have no checks or balances at the federal level. And so as we call for a vision of Chicago to be safe and affordable for everyone, that is what we're protecting. That's what we're fighting for. We're not just simply resisting tyranny. We're speaking to the hopes and aspirations of our ancestors. And so immigrants from around the globe have come to this city. Those of us who came up from the South, from the great migrations as Black folks, have all formed this beloved space that I would describe as the soul of America, right? And our diversity is the soul of Chicago. And so I will continue to protect the First Amendment because it's fundamental to our democracy. And I will continue to speak to the hopes and aspirations of working people.
Time now for another call. Here's Maria in Edgewater. Hi, Maria. What's your question?
Hi, Sasha Ann. Hi, Mayor Johnson. Thank you so much for taking my call. My call is in regards to immigration. My partner is set to be an immigration check-in on Monday, and I am terrified. Mayor Johnson, how are you personally making sure that ICE is not basically shooting fish in a barrel? How are you making sure that people who are being lawful with their commands to come to a place that they know is dangerous to them? And how are you preventing this from them being kidnapped?
Thanks for your question, Maria.
Yeah, thank you for that question, Maria. And, you know, this is the anxiety and the fear that this president has administered. And there's never been a time in our country or our world's history where great societies have been born out of fear.
And it also comes after, just to note, federal immigration agents detaining at least 10 people who had recently shown up for immigration appointments at the Department of Homeland Security building in the South Loop.
Yeah.
So Maria's concern is quite valid.
It's legitimate. And essentially, as I described them before, these are human traps, right? And so these are, you know, not, you know, interactions and sessions to give people an update. You know, this has been used to ultimately kidnap people and to have a federal government where you have masked, armed men disappearing people from our city and around the country is reprehensible. It's unconscionable. And so one of the things that we have done and what we will continue to do is to make sure that people know their rights. We have a full Know Your Rights campaign where not just our police department, but all of our sister agencies and our city departments are delivering that message to residents across the city. And it's not just enough for those who are in Maria's position and her partner's position to know their rights. It's important that all of us know the rights that we all have to work to protect, because the violation of anyone's rights is the violation of all of ours. And so we'll continue to make sure that we, you know, educate, you know, people on what their rights are. And again, we'll continue to show up on behalf of the immigrant community by speaking out against this administration and continuing to put forth provisions and policies that, you know, ultimately provide protection and safety for all of our families.
On the incident that I mentioned in the South Loop, folks are questioning whether CPD was aiding ICE agents on that day. Advocates say that CPD officers, they set up a traffic perimeter and they were inside the building with ICE agents. So CPD says that its officers didn't cooperate with that. So from what you've seen, Mayor, do you think that Chicago police might have been cooperating with ICE?
They were not. You know, just to provide some clarity around what you described. So the perimeters in which Chicago Police Department secured, again, that work was to ensure the safety of people who were organizing and protesting. Where this particular location was, there's traffic. And so there were certain points within that space that our police department had to make sure that people were not harmed. When the call came in, it came in under, you know, a distress call for an officer. And so there were officers that were inside of the facility to find out what was essentially happening. What our police officers did not know is the fact that you had ICE establishing a site without the city's knowledge. That is the real harm and threat that we are under right now. And once the situation was assessed, our officers fell back, but also had to work to make sure that the First Amendment was protected.
So in situations like this, what's the communication between CPD and ICE supposed to look like?
They don't communicate at all, right? So there's no communication from ICE to our local police department. Again, this particular site, ICE in the middle of the night snuck in and, took over a space and carried out a particular operation. And so this is why we're going to continue to remain vigilant to ensure that people know what their rights are, but also to make sure that we're speaking out in a peaceful way. This is not going to shift and change by one man's voice or one person's voice. It's going to take all of our collective voices together. And again, my heart is with Maria and her family and other families who are feeling this level of anxiety and fear right now. But there are far more people in this city that are united around ensuring that our First Amendment is protected, but also that we're protecting, immigrant families. That's why we held the line on remaining a welcoming city.
Yeah.
Those are measures that we can take that we have control over. There are certain aspects at the federal level that we're not able to dictate, but this is why our voices are important to be lifted up. This is why we have gone to the courts to sue this administration, and it's why we're protecting our people in this city with policies like the Welcoming City Ordinance and the Illinois Trust Act. But it's going to take all of us, again, to work together to ensure that all families are protected.
So you're working with Superintendent Snelling as well to maybe respond differently?
Well, look, we're always going to work to improve our interactions. Look, this is unprecedented times, right? There's no playbook for this. There's no script for this. This is not to offer up any excuses, but let's not act like this is normal. And so in a hostile situation like what residents experienced last week, it was important that our police department assessed the situation and kept the perimeter safe, and they did that.
We had a listener call us, Caroline, in Mayfair. She asked, will you yourself be in the streets to protest since you called on people to resist and rise up?
Absolutely. I mean, this is not just a position. This is a moment, right? And as someone who has organized with brown and black and working class families around this city fighting for equity and justice, my position around our effective organizing doesn't change because I'm mayor of Chicago. I'm just saying that it's not one individual that will ultimately bring justice to our society. But I will always remain on the front line doing my part to ensure that working people across this city are seen, loved, valued, and invested in.
Illinois' spring legislative session ended last month without a vote on transit funding. So what is your backup plan if that funding doesn't come through for the CTA?
It has to come through for our transportation system. Look, the city of Chicago and our region, we make up, roughly 85-87% of the overall, transportation economic, apparatus, right? So the state of Illinois won't be able to function in the way in which it can to its full potential without fully investing in our public transportation system. Now, what I can say is that, there were some ideas that were presented and moved through the Senate. By the time it got to the House, the clock just ran out. Mm. What I do know is that there are a number of elected leaders all over the state of Illinois that are committed to ensuring that we have, a transportation system that is world-class. Look, we have a world-class city, right? And all the evidence is pointing upward. Right, where we had 300 million riders last year. It's a 11, almost 12% increase from the previous year, between our buses and our trains. Our workforce continues to get stronger, more work to be done there. But we deserve a world-class transportation system in a world-class city. As tourism goes up and hotel occupancy, that rate continues to strengthen. And as we continue to attract big conventions, IPW will be here this weekend an incredible opportunity for the city of Chicago to be on the world stage. But the larger point is that whether it's Representative Delgado or State Senator Avila Vilam, and I know both of them have taken this issue seriously, Representative Cam Buckner and the Speaker of the House, the Senate President, I know the Governor, all are committed to ensuring that our public transportation system, particularly in our region, is well-funded. And there are a number of proposals and ideas on the table that there are some conversations about the General Assembly taking up that issue solely over the summer.
Yeah, so, I mean, the thing is, we don't want to see big cuts to service for Chicago buses and Chicago trains. So tell us more about how you're working with the state moving forward.
So we've been in conversations for the last, several months, the last 18 months in particular. I mean, look, this fiscal cliff is something that the state of Illinois has known about for some time, particularly with the unprecedented, once-in-a-lifetime infusion of resources coming from the federal government. We knew that as those dollars were winding down, that the state would have to address this issue. So, look, our system is so substantial and so critical to the economic prowess of our region that we just cannot stand for any cuts. Now, no one in Springfield has spoken to me specifically around cuts. Okay. And so the conversations have been ongoing around revenue options that we should explore in order to ensure that we have a safe, reliable, and affordable public transportation system.
Yeah, because you mentioned the fiscal cliff there, but this is also coming at a time when you're figuring out a billion-dollar budget hole that you need to fill for the next year, and cuts are already on the table. So would you make cuts to ensure that public transit's funded?
Well, the public transportation system cannot survive simply through the city's budget, right? The state of Illinois will have to act. And again, remember, we're talking about the entire region. We're not just talking about the city of Chicago. And we're talking about all regions of Chicago. The north region of Chicago, of Illinois also benefits from a fully funded transportation system. So this is not, just simply a concentrated challenge. And with that being said, what my conversations have entailed have been very clear about finding progressive forms of revenue to ensure that all of our systems are supported. Because, look, at the end of the day, our public accommodations, working people rely upon them, whether that's our education system, whether that's our healthcare, whether that's transportation. So this is a larger political challenge that we do have around progressive revenue so that even doing the work, in which I'm doing, to find ways in which government can be more productive and efficient, that trying to cut our way towards solvency, that pattern has not worked. In fact, it has consistently failed us over and over again. Remember, there were cuts to public housing. Remember, they had to cut public schools, right? You had to cut, other city services and lay people off. And yet here we are still in the same predicament. The one thing that hasn't changed is that we don't have a commitment to really drive progressive revenue. The one thing that we have not tried yet is the one thing that is still on the table. And so for me, there's clear evidence that everything else, austere budgets, have not been useful or beneficial for working people. Now, this does not mean that government should not work to find ways in which we can be more productive. There are duplicative services that we can combine. There are a number of things that we're looking at. But again,
lead to less service? Because how would Chicago function with less service?
Well, if the funding doesn't come from Springfield, that is a possibility, right? I mean, it could be less service. It could be higher fares. It could also mean unemployment, right? Because remember, when we're talking about cuts to services, we're talking about cutting people. These trains are ran, these buses are ran by people. And so it's why I've worked so hard to expedite the hiring, at CTA. And this is why we were able to add additional lines, our express buses on our streets, and our Better Streets for Buses operation, which is ultimately to create, more lanes that are dedicated to buses and allow for express buses to move to get people from point A to point B and to get them there faster and safer and affordably, right? And so this is not to suggest or say that if we don't get funding, that there are real consequences. to not being fully funded. And particularly at a time when tourism is up, as, you know, violent crime continues to go down in the city of Chicago, this is not the time to reduce our services. In fact, this is an opportunity for to increase our services, right? It's not enough for me. When I talk about my vision for public transportation, it's not enough for me or our city to just simply maintain the status quo. As a world-class city, we deserve a world-class transportation system. This is about my vision moving forward. I'm going to continue to be on the front line, working with our state legislators to ensure that the investments that are coming to our region that ultimately benefit for the entire state, that we actually get the just due, because it's so critical to the vibrancy and the economy of our entire state.
We've got Dr. Cameron on the line in Lakeview with a question regarding safety. Mm-hmm. Hi, doctor. Welcome to the show, and go ahead with your question.
Hi. Thank you, Mayor, for taking my question. I'm a frequent CTA rider. I live on the north side. I go to the south side for work. There is a situation every time I get my family and kids to go enjoy the city and CTA. It's the environment in CTA is not really friendly towards families and kids. And also people who commute for work, especially during certain hours, you see drug dealers, you see people walking from wagons to wagons, you see people smoking on the wagons. Multiple times they ask for help. Nobody came to show help. It technically, CTA in Chicago has a potential to be a good representation of the city, but unfortunately, it doesn't have a good optics for our city. And also, that's one of the reasons the ridership is low on CTA and train lines, like especially Red Line and other lines. So I want to ask you if you have any plans to improve and make it family friendly and for commuters to enjoy the CTA ride, because it's been for many years like that and it's getting worse and worse.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Cameron. Dr. Cameron also asked if you will ride the CTA to see how unsafe it is.
I have ridden the CTA, and I didn't. It wasn't a new thing for me. You know, before I was mayor, I would ride the CTA all the time. My line is the green line, and I know exactly what Dr. Cameron is talking about. You know, the fact that we do have individuals who are addicted and those who are unhoused. Our public transportation system has drawn all different types of people, and the ill of our city is often manifested within our public transportation system. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And even as mayor, I've had opportunities to continue to ride the public transportation just to remain connected and grounded. And so one of the things that we are doing is that we're working with this, you know, bill in Springfield to strengthen public and community safety on our transportation system. My family, Dr. Cameron, we were regular riders of the public transportation system here. And, you know, it's something that is paramount for the growth of our city. And so, you know, part of the investments are not just simply to have modernized systems or even more workers. It's also about ensuring that that people are safe, but we're also addressing the larger societal issues. It's why we've increased our funding around housing and homelessness. It's why we've increased our support for behavior and mental health support services for families that are struggling with addictions and other forms of trauma. And that plays out, unfortunately, on our public transportation system. So it's a full force of government approach, Dr. Cameron. It's not just simply about creating, you know, more, you know, centralized security and safety mechanisms on the train or buses, but it's also making sure that we're getting people the help that they need.
Yeah.
Because that is also something that as a city, we are no longer going to ignore. The challenges that you're describing in our public transportation system, you're also speaking to problems that we've had for a very long time, whether it's, again, the lack of support for behavior and mental health support services and housing and homelessness. And because they've gone unaddressed for such a long time, we're now seeing the manifestation in a more dramatic way. And that's why I'm investing in housing and supporting our unhoused residents. It's why we're supporting behavior and mental health support services. It's why we're making critical investments in law enforcement as we continue to drive violence down in the city of Chicago. It will continue to take all of us advocating effectively for the right revenue so that we can continue to make the critical investments to keep everyone safe.
Let's hear now from Christopher in Woodlawn with another public transit question. Hi, Christopher.
Hello. Hello, Mayor. Hey. Brandon, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask you about the possibility of using congestion pricing, as you've seen New York try and implement, as a way to reduce the deficit that CTA runs. I'm thinking of a paper that was written by Chicago Booth faculty member Milena Almagro, who showed that you could use congestion pricing and actually reduce the cost of transit and incentivize people to take transit as opposed to other forms of transportation. So,
yeah, was it Chris?
Christopher, yeah.
Yeah, Chris, I didn't mean to give you a nickname there, Christopher. but, you know, you're onto something, you know, because I think going back to Dr. Cameron's concern is that as we increase ridership, and it is moving in the right direction, as we increase ridership and more visibility, that's ultimately how you create safer spaces, right? The more people that are using our public accommodations, and particularly our transportation system, the safer our system becomes, because it's just the accountability comes with more people around. It's like with our public schools, when you have more adults in the building, it creates for a better learning environment. And what, you know, Christopher is referring to, this congestion tax that, you know, has had some, you know, a lot of consternation around it, but I think that there is an opportunity for us to look into a measure like that and other particular measures that are more innovative to, one, fund the system, but more importantly, I think, to Christopher's point, is to incentivize people using it. Because, again, when I talk about building the safest, most affordable big city in America, I know this is probably going to make might trigger Christopher when I say this. We actually conservatively have room for 400,000 more people in our city. And the number is actually bigger, right? I mean, we technically can get up to another 700, 800,000 more people in the city. But I think to Christopher's point, you know, without a world-class public transportation system and an incentive for people to actually use it, it creates other challenges, right? So this is part of my larger vision for our public transportation system and our city as a whole, is to build more affordable housing around our transportation systems, right? It's why we put such an investment in extending the red line. And as we build more affordable homes near our public transit system, as well as other amenities, improving our schools, you build a society that is safe and affordable, and that it can accommodate the growing, you know, transformational family in today's modern society.
We're going to switch things up a little bit. We'll do this time around more of a grab bag of questions for the rest of the hour that we've got you here in the hot seat.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Oh, yeah. And I'm going to go straight back to the phones, Mayor, starting with Bob in Belmont Cragen. Hey, Bob. Bob,
hello?
You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Get right to your very specific question for the mayor.
I have a question about the city of Chicago TV.
Okay.
It's funny, but the city presents a lot of cultural and arts programs, but it hasn't been funded in years, and they keep replaying the same programs over and over again. Is the mayor willing to fund that program?
Hey, thank you, Bob.
Hey, thanks for the question, Bob.
So he's talking about Chicago TV broadcast.
Yeah, so most people don't know about it, and it's been one of those things where it has not been in the regular use that it needs to be in. And so, Bob, I am happy to look into that. We've talked about doing some programming, getting more folks connected to city government. My comms director, as well as my comms team, they're here. And so, you know, Bob, once we get it up and running, I'm counting on you to tune in, and maybe we can have him on as a guest.
Yeah. All right. Thank you again, Bob. On now to Sylvia in Vernon Hills. I told you these questions would be specific. Hi, right. Sylvia. Go ahead with your question.
Okay, good afternoon, Mr. Mayor.
Good afternoon.
I'm calling you about something very, very different. I work on the Riverwalk. At the busiest part of the Riverwalk, which I would say is Wacker and the Michigan Avenue Bridge, you know, I know, our city spent millions and millions of dollars to complete the Riverwalk, which was built for all the people all the time. But it's a large part of our population for whom it's not accessible. It's for those who are elderly, those who are physically challenged, those with young children. They have to navigate 50 steep steps down to the Riverwalk. And watching them do that is very painful. And worse, watching them do that on the way back is bad also. The reason I am calling is that we know there was an elevator right nearby. For many years now, that elevator has been a construction site. And getting that elevator into working order for these people would be a wonderful thing and would cost a small, small fraction of what the Riverwalk cost.
All right, let me get you a response here, Sylvia. So she's calling about accessibility issues here on the Riverwalk and the elevator.
You. That's a great question. In fact, you know, I'll make sure you know that my deputy mayor of infrastructure looks into this particular elevator and what the delay is. You know, having a family and knowing exactly what that feels like when you have strollers and, you know, kids who are ready to get home. And, you know, my kids are older now, 11, almost 11, 13 and 17. I know they're all excited for the greatest holiday ever, Father's Day. I know they're just they've been preparing for
when
weeks.
When is that again?
Wow.
This Sunday.
There you go. But no, it's an important, you know, aspect of our infrastructure to ensure accessibility for families and, you know, individuals with disabilities and the like. So thank you. We'll look into that.
On now to Howard in Austin. Hey, Howard. Welcome to Reset.
Hey, hey. Hello. Thank you, guys. What's up, Mayor? How you doing?
What's going on, Wesley?
A quick question. In 2023, Chicago was granted a natural disaster by FEMA, but the city of Chicago was denied infrastructure money by FEMA. But HUD now is giving us a lifeline with the community development grant. But the problem that the LMI community is having is that all the grant money the city wants to use for infrastructure, when we know under the HUD guidelines, 70% of that money is supposed to be used for unmet needs, people with mold in the basement. So the question to you is that, with that being said, would you be willing to work with the city and the people in the LMI community and getting 70% of that grant money for those basements to be fixed? And also, under Section 3, under the Stanford Act, under the community development, would you be willing to reallocate money to the Department of Building, Department of Transportation, Department of Sanitation and Department of Water Reclamation to hire directly people from the LMI community that's unemployed to work for those and help clean that community temporarily? That way they can get a resume as a Chicago employee for future.
Yeah, it's a great question.
So he wants to know how federal funds will be used to help people whose basements have
flooded.
Right,
yeah, and for folks who are not familiar, in 2023 we had that torrential rainfall, probably the largest rainfall, I think, since 1987.
That's right, in July,
many families on the west side, particularly in Austin where I live, families were flooded out. And we did put some initial dollars into helping families recover, right? There's still a lot of work to be done. Now, as I understand it, is that the federal guidelines are somewhat restrictive, because the infrastructure is really what, you know, that's what caused the damage. So we have to invest in the infrastructure. We are working, though, Howard, to figure out, you know, how many dollars we can appropriate to make sure that families can recover, particularly the basements that were damaged. And also, to your point, definitely committed to making sure that that the process by which we identify individuals that can help these families recover, that we're doing it in an equitable way. I think the people who actually help these families get back to what they had, or at least close to it, that it should reflect the community. So, Howard, you're spot on, and we'll continue to work to figure out the balance between fixing the infrastructure so it doesn't happen again, while also making sure that the families can recover, and particularly those families on the west side of Chicago.
You know, earlier you talked about the diversity within your administration. Last month, we saw that the Trump administration opened a civil rights investigation into the city of Chicago. This was after you made comments, you were highlighting the number of black officials within your team. Has anything happened with that?
Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, again,
what did you make of that even? The federal government is investigating the city after you talking about how many black people you employ.
Right. You know, what I find is very pharisaical. And this is the height of hypocrisy, right? Because you have, you know, a president's cabinet that looks like the country club and not the country, right? And you'd be hard-pressed to find individuals that are competent and capable of actually carrying out the particular division of government that they've been entrusted to do. And so our administration is filled with incredibly talented, gifted, highly competent and skilled individuals, and we're very proud of our diversity. You know, 34% black folks, 30% white folks, 24, almost 25% brown folks. I think we're now at 8% Asians. That's the highest it's ever been for the Asian American community. Mm-hmm. So we take a lot of 64% of my administration are women, right? And so we take a lot of pride in the fact that our administration is filled with talented, gifted individuals that are highly skilled and diverse. As far as what has come from it, I mean, you know, they sent a letter. You know, I mean, okay. I don't even know if this particular division of the federal government is even staffed, quite frankly, not to mention staffed with individuals that actually know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So, but we're going to remain, you know, consistent in our approach, like fighting for equity and justice. That's who we are as Chicago. You know, we believe that we have to look out for everyone. And that's how I was raised. You know, I'm one of 10 and a middle child, and we'll be celebrating my father, who, by the way, said that I cried the first 6 months of my life, of which I told him that's what happens when you don't pick children up, by the way. You know, but look, we've all worked together as a family to ensure that we all had what we need.
Yeah.
And that's the spirit behind my administration. And that's why our diversity is our strength. And we can't back down ever as a city fighting for equity and justice for everyone.
Real quick, before I have to let you go, Mayor, we had three listeners call in earlier about very specific neighborhood development projects, like a proposed hotel at 5300 State Street and upzoning in Edgewater. All concerned resident input isn't being heard. That's what they all said. So how do we do development that incorporates the concerns of residents in the process? Give me 30 seconds.
Yeah, that's the only way to do it. We put forth a 1.25 Build Better Together investment. It's the largest investment for housing and economic development. It cannot happen without community. So if those if that information is able to be shared, we'll make sure that our deputy mayor for business, economic, and neighborhood development, that they'll actually get in touch with them.
Yeah. We have been speaking with Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson this hour. Thank you so much for answering not just my questions, but our listeners. We got to leave it there, Mayor. Pleasure having you.
Thank you. Happy Father's Day, everyone.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic and Micah Yasin. It was edited by Dan Tucker and Meha Ahmed, and it was mixed by Ari Mejia. Our goal here on Reset is to bring you into the conversation, which is why we keep our phone lines open. Keep us on your speed dial and subscribe to the podcast. You can also visit us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for staying with us.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely.